I remember the first file crossing my desk, because it did not arrive with urgency, alarms, or the sense that something irreversible had already happened. But instead, came wrapped in the ordinary language of concern that families use when routines fracture quietly, when phone calls go unanswered longer than expected, when a life that usually leaves a trail of small confirmations suddenly goes still. And as I reviewed the initial notes, I saw a young woman who had plans, a job, and a recent change in her personal life, and I saw a timeline that did not scream violence, but suggested distance, delay, and uncertainty, which are often the earliest disguises of something far worse. And as we began retracing her movements and communications, I realized that the most revealing details were not dramatic at all, but lived in what stopped happening, in the silence of messages not returned and locations not revisited, and in the presence of one person whose story did not align with the evidence as it accumulated. Because by the time we understood that the separation she was navigating had already turned dangerous, the distance between her last known movements and the man responsible for them had stretched hundreds of miles, and the case was no longer about finding answers, but about recovering what remained of Alexis Gabe. When I began reviewing Alexis Gabe's background, I did not see a life defined by chaos or instability, but one shaped by routine, work, and the ordinary ambitions of someone in her mid-20s who was still determining the direction of her future. She lived in California, maintained employment, and kept regular contact with friends and family, which meant that her sudden disappearance was not something that could be easily explained by a spontaneous decision to withdraw. In cases like this, the baseline matters, because disappearance only becomes meaningful when contrasted against a pattern of presence, and Alexis had been present in the lives of those around her. The initial report came from her family after she stopped responding to messages and failed to show up where she was expected, and those early hours were filled with uncertainty rather than certainty. Because missing person cases often begin without clarity, there was no confirmed crime scene, no immediate evidence of violence, and no witnesses who could say definitively what had gone wrong. What we did have was a timeline that showed her last known activities, her recent breakup, and the fact that she had been in contact with her former boyfriend shortly before she vanished. Her relationship history quickly became relevant, not because investigators default to suspicion in breakups, but because the timing mattered, and because those closest to a person often have the most access during moments of transition. Alexis had recently ended a relationship with her boyfriend, and that separation had not been mutual or calm, according to those who knew her. Breakups can create emotional volatility, but emotion alone does not establish criminal behavior, which is why we focused first on confirming facts rather than interpreting motives. We reviewed phone records, financial activity, and location data to establish where Alexis had been and who she had communicated with in the days leading up to her disappearance. Her phone activity showed a pattern consistent with her normal routine until it stopped entirely, and there were no indications that she had planned to leave town or sever contact with her family. Her vehicle was later located, which narrowed the scope of the investigation and confirmed that she had not simply left the area voluntarily. As we reconstructed her final movements, it became clear that she had met with her former boyfriend after the breakup, and that this interaction was one of the last confirmed contacts she had with anyone. This did not make him a suspect by assumption, but it placed him at a critical intersection of opportunity and timing, which required closer examination. When we attempted to speak with him, his explanations were inconsistent with the evidence we had already collected, and those inconsistencies became more pronounced as additional data was reviewed. Family members provided insight into Alexis's state of mind, and nothing suggested that she intended to disappear or distance herself permanently from the people who cared about her. She had plans, responsibilities, and ongoing conversations that pointed toward continuity rather than escape. In missing person investigations, voluntary absence usually leaves traces of preparation, and in this case, preparation was absent. As days passed without contact, the urgency increased and resources were escalated to search for physical evidence that could explain what had happened. Search efforts focused on areas connected to her last known locations, and while those early searches did not immediately yield answers, they established that Alexis was not where she was supposed to be. The absence itself became the evidence that something had gone wrong. Throughout this phase, the investigation remained grounded in verification, and every new piece of information was evaluated against what could be confirmed. There were no dramatic revelations yet, only the steady accumulation of facts that pointed toward a single individual whose movements and communications diverged sharply from the expected narrative. By the end of this stage, we knew that Alexis had not left on her own, and we knew that the person most recently connected to her had begun moving away from the area shortly after she disappeared. The turning point in the investigation came not from speculation, but from documented evidence that established a clearer sequence of events. Surveillance footage, location data, and travel records began to align in a way that narrowed uncertainty and replaced it with specificity. Alexis's former boyfriend had left California and was traveling east, covering hundreds of miles in a time frame that coincided directly with her disappearance. We reviewed surveillance footage that placed him at specific locations after Alexis was last seen, and that footage contradicted the account he had previously given to investigators. When timelines diverge, it is not the divergence itself that matters, but what replaced it. And in this case, what replaced his version of events was a documented trail that extended across state lines. His vehicle was captured on cameras, his movements logged by tolls and other records, and the pattern suggested flight rather than coincidence. During this phase, we also examined digital communications recovered from devices and accounts associated with both Alexis and her former boyfriend. There were no messages indicating mutual plans to travel together or any agreement that would explain her absence. Instead, there was a clear cutoff, after which only his activity continued while hers ceased entirely. That asymmetry was critical because it demonstrated that whatever had happened, it did not involve her ongoing participation. As law enforcement agencies coordinated across jurisdictions, the focus shifted to locating him and preventing further evasion. He was eventually located in another state, and when contacted by authorities, he provided statements that were again inconsistent with the evidence. These inconsistencies were not minor discrepancies, but fundamental conflicts between his account and what had been recorded by independent systems. While he was in custody, search efforts continued in areas connected to his travel route, guided by data rather than intuition. Investigators followed the path established by confirmed sightings and records, narrowing the search zones incrementally. This process was methodical and slow, because accuracy mattered more than speed, and each area was searched only when there was a factual basis to justify it. The discovery that confirmed the worst outcome came when Alexis's remains were located in a remote area, consistent with the travel path of her former boyfriend. The condition and location of her remains provided confirmation that she had been killed and that her body had been transported after her death. This finding transformed the case from a missing person investigation into a homicide investigation grounded in physical evidence. Forensic examination established cause of death, and while the details were handled with care, the conclusion was clear and supported by medical findings. The evidence confirmed that Alexis had been killed by violence and that her death occurred around the time she was last seen. There was no indication of an accidental death or third-party involvement beyond the individual already identified. The suspect later died while in custody, which meant that the case would not proceed to trial, but the investigation did not end with his death. Our responsibility shifted to documenting the facts completely, ensuring that the record reflected what had been established and that Alexis's family received answers supported by evidence rather than inference. Closure in these cases does not come from prosecution alone, but from clarity. By the end of this chapter of the investigation, there was no remaining ambiguity about what had happened or who was responsible. The trail of evidence was continuous, verifiable, and sufficient to explain the sequence of events without reliance on speculation or narrative embellishment. After the suspect's death, the case entered its final phase, which focused on documentation, confirmation, and communication rather than pursuit. Every piece of evidence was reviewed again to ensure the conclusions were supported independently and that no gaps remained unexamined. This process is essential, especially when a case will not be tested in court, because the integrity of the findings depends entirely on the quality of the investigation. We compiled timelines that integrated digital records, physical evidence, witness statements, and forensic findings into a single coherent account. This timeline showed Alexis's last known movements, her final contact with her former boyfriend, his departure from California, and the discovery of her remains. Each segment of the timeline was anchored by verifiable data, allowing the narrative to stand without interpretation. Family members were informed of the findings in a manner that prioritized accuracy and respect. There were no speculative explanations offered, only confirmed facts and documented conclusions. In these moments, clarity matters more than language, because families are left to carry the weight of what happened long after the investigation concludes. The case file reflects a sequence that began with an ordinary disappearance and ended with confirmed homicide, and it demonstrates how routine investigative methods, when applied consistently, can reveal the truth even when the responsible party is no longer alive to answer for it. There were no unanswered questions about Alexis's fate, only determinants of the outcome. Alexis Gabe's case remains documented as a homicide caused by her former boyfriend, supported by physical evidence, forensic analysis, and a continuous trail of records that establish responsibility. Her disappearance was not voluntary, her death was not accidental, and the sequence of events leading to that conclusion is fully supported by verified findings. When I review the file now, what stands out is not a dramatic turning point or a single decisive moment, but the accumulation of ordinary confirmations that together formed an undeniable picture. Each record, each location, and each recovered detail contributed to a conclusion that did not rely on interpretation, but on proof. The investigation is closed, but the documentation remains, preserved to ensure that Alexis's story is recorded accurately and completely. What remains is a factual account of what happened, established through evidence and verified through methodal work, and a record that reflects both the life that was lost and the process that confirmed how it was taken.